Is Sportsville back for another week? We are. It's the dog days. I remember when we coined cat days of winter, but this is the we're back to the proverbial dog days of summer. NBA officially over. The NHL draft, the NHL NBA draft, and NBA NHL free agency is right around the corner, which is to say it is officially nothing but baseball season, baby.
Yeah, I think, as you said, it was the cat days, and now it's officially the dog days, the real dog days.
Yeah. This was always when I was working in sports highlights, when I was a highlight maker at one of the big brands. This was my favorite day of the year to come in because there was nothing else on any of the TVs when you came in. It was just baseball wall to wall all day long. obviously, there are going to be some exceptions to that as the Olympic Games begin this coming, I don't even know, sometime this week. I have asked my wife when the Olympics start so many times in the last week, and she has reminded me so many times that she does not work in sports anymore, and she also does not know. So the Olympic Games are at some point, but no fans. My interest, I will admit, it is tied pretty hard to that. I feel like Olympics with no fans is not going to be that much fun to watch, or as much, is to say, fun to watch.
Yeah, I won't lie. I have no interest in Olympics, and I don't know how much of that is fans. I don't know how much of that is all the rising COVID cases around it. But no excitement. When the Canadian women's soccer played this morning, I genuinely thought the Olympics were in August. I think that's also part of it. I like don't know when they start.
Well,
so there's no hope, and because it's been so like it's been delayed, and there's so much else going on, the right. hype, and there's no fans, the hype isn't there. So yeah, I got nothing.
Do you think you will get suckered in though?
With I don't the know.
Like, you turn on your TV to start your day, and there's like fencing on.
Probably. Yeah. It's hard to, as we talked about in the Euro. It's hard to not get into, if not get into, but at least get a little into sports being on TV all day.
I think I like the Winter Olympics generally better than the summers.
I go back and forth. I don't know. Summers, I feel like the highs are higher.
Mm.
But winter has the winter, I think, is more consistent. I would agree.
And there is an idea that more of the world has a summer than has a winter, right? Not all the world has it. The thing about winter is that the events are sort of weird by nature because it's winter, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be on skis or you're on skates, or you know, there's a bunch of like weird things that you have to already do before you even like bobsled and all that stuff. But summer, you could almost call it more of a pure Olympics because it's mostly like track and field is a huge part of it, and like it's how far can you throw something and how fast can you run, and it's, you know, who's the best at baseball, who's the best at basketball. It's a fun sort of event sort of thing. I guess, you know, for a while it was the Olympic hockey, but the weirdness of those winter games always suckers me in, with the extreme skiing and the, you know, the moguls and the big airs and all that crap. But there's skateboarding this year. I'm going to watch Olympic skateboarding.
Yeah, I'm excited for skateboarding, and I'm excited for the Remember Some Guys Olympics, which is the men's baseball tournament.
Yeah, Jose Bautista.
Jose Bautista, Juan Francisco. You got Danny Valencia playing for Israel.
Pretty exciting.
You have Ryan Goins playing for Mexico. You have Anthony Gose pitching for the United States. You have Todd Frazier, Emilio Bonifacio, Ian Kinsler. Some fun names in there.
That's pretty good stuff. I didn't know that. So I like that. That's a good pull. And as you said, women's soccer and all that. We have ample time to get into it as it happens. But things that are happening in the nearer term, not nearer than the Olympics starting, but have happened that we can talk about this week. The Blue Jays, we had thought maybe, and we had heard buzz, and we had waited on bated breath to find out when they would be returning home to play home games in Canada. We got word before Friday's game against Texas. The Blue Jays are coming home at the end of this month. They are finishing their series against the Red Sox tonight, and then it is no more Buffalo home games for the rest of the year. I, conservatively, am going to say that they are going to win every home game in August, at least.
If you had asked me before Monday, I would have agreed with you. Now I have, like, we were talking all weekend about how they were never going to lose again when they're beating up on the Rangers. But I don't know now. Like, I don't know if I've ever had such a whiplash team in my life.
Because yeah, I feel they're a team of extremes, that's for sure.
Because I feel like even, like, we've talked many times before, early in the show, bring up 2015, the first half of that season was extremely frustrating. And playing 500 ball. But I don't know. Maybe it's recency bias. Maybe I just don't remember as well. But the extremes, as you said, of this season are, I don't know if I've ever rooted for anything like it, man. It's crazy.
It's going to be wild to see them come home. You know, the simple narratives, you know, have been basically that they've feasted on everybody they should be beating. They've beaten pretty soundly and are playing 500 or below against teams with better than 500 records. The results against the Red Sox this year have been emblematic of how frustrating they're outscoring the Red Sox by a wide margin and have lost a ton of the games. It is it's hard. It's tough. And yeah, they're a young team. We sort of go back to, you know, we had a week where it was like they're never going to lose, and now it's a week where it's like, you know, they're a young team that's still learning their things. The Red Sox, one thing you can say about them this year is they have come out to every game like ready to play, ready to go. Cora's done a good job getting them managed, and you could sort of see them in the beginning of this series jump on the Jays really early. I think the Jays do know that their talent for talent are right there with this team. It's just right now there's a little more season on that Red Sox team. I remain optimistic. I'm obviously not didn't see anything in the last week. The three wins against Texas, and then the loss, single loss that has us reeling back down to earth. But you know, I don't have anything that makes me feel less optimistic about how special this year can be. I know you're seeing some things come in. Ross Atkins is on Tim and Sid and sort of is downplaying a little bit. Not Tim and Sid, pardon me, Tim and Friends. Downplaying a little bit as to what might be available in the pitching market. It is sort of, we have, you know, many weeks we've gone on here and talked about guys they should target. But the reality is, you know, aside from like Jose Berrios, there really isn't a lot of names that you hear bandied around that'll be available. But sort of back to the topic at hand, I'm thrilled with the idea that they're going to be back in Toronto. And I got a huge rush of like optimism and positivity at that news dropping on Friday.
Yeah, and I think you said it right there. You said that it's what this team can be.
Mm-hmm.
Is, and I think that's absolutely true. There's so much talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball, which we all know about. The bullpen even seems to be, if not good, at least stabilizing a little bit with some guys coming back, and they haven't really had a let's shit the bed kind of game in a while. I think my concern is sort of what you were talking about with that they're beating up on who they should beat up, which is true. But other than that one Rays series at the beginning, not the beginning of July, where was it? Yeah, the beginning of July, they haven't really taken any series from those teams they need to take them from yet this year.
Definitely.
And that is, and again, it's July 21st, so not drawing any conclusions yet, but they took 2 of 3 from the Yankees to open the year, and 2 of 3 from the Yankees in April, and then, you know,
got swept.
They took 2 of 3 from the Rays in April, and then other than that, 2 of 3 from the A's, and then got swept by the Sox and the Rays and the Yankees. You know, it just feels like there's a lot. It's so back and forth, and I think the way they're losing and winning doesn't really do them any favors. Like beating the Rangers, whatever it was, 22-2 in 3 games, and then just getting obliterated by the Red Sox. It's hard to gauge a real opinion on this team other than looking at numbers like the run differential, which is still very good. And I think it's fair to say on the game on Monday against the Red Sox, I thought Ross Stripling's point about why he didn't have it is a fair point. Like, I don't think that's an easy thing for him to be dealing with. But it's also hard to look at, and you look at the expected wins and losses right now, and by expected wins, the Jays should be in second in the division, like half a game behind the Rays. The expected win loss is 54-37.
Crazy.
With the Blue Jays, which on one hand is extremely encouraging because it does...
That's six whole wins.
Right. That does give sort of an idea of what the team actually is. But as much as we like to rely on these kind of stats and Pythagorean records and expected records and run differential, they got like 2 weeks to figure out who they are.
Sure. To give some numbers to the context we were laying out there, coming into Wednesday's game, 4-6 against Boston, outscoring them 61-49. 6-3 against Baltimore, outscoring them 64-39. 5-8 against Tampa, as you mentioned, being outscored 53-62. And the one that hurts for me, 6-6 against the Yankees, 44-42. The Yankees, all 12 of those games were very winnable. They didn't play any games against the Yankees where I was like, oh. They don't have it. They've been right there in basically all of those games, and including a bunch of them against the Rays. Right? They also, I think there was two games where they really didn't put up a fight, but they had a chance to win a bunch of those Rays games as well. So, to your point, you know, tacking it on when they are beating bad teams, when they're 4-0 against Miami and 6-0 against Atlanta and 4-2 against Texas, and you could sort of pick those out if you want. But yeah, the offense feasts on bad pitching, and you just the close games is where when people are starting to have concerns, that ends up being like one run games. They're 6-10. It's sort of interesting the way those things are adding up for them. In a league play, they're 13-2, which is every time they play a National League team, I'm like, oh man, they would be.
Oh my god, put them in the National League East, they'd have won 62 games by now.
Yeah,
but. All that being said, they are only four games back of the wild card.
Mm-hmm.
And the two teams ahead of them are the negative 52 run differential Seattle Mariners and Oakland, who are okay, I think. But neither of whom, I think, are uncatchable teams.
Definitely.
Like, if you take out... Not that I want the Jays to go and play a wild card game at the Trop, but... Take it over, not I suppose.
And I feel like we come on here every week and said it. The right now, the longest winning streak for this team this year is just five games, which seems like it's got to change. That's the one thing I keep looking at is like, man, a month ago they won five games, and it was like, yeah, this is a damn good team. And I think they won four in a row after. So they basically they won 9 of 10, I think, in mid June, and. I was like, yeah, this is where it really turns on. I haven't been able to really sustain something like that because they offset that with some losses. But yeah, I think we continue to be where we are, right? Where it to the point you made about the run differential sort of and the expected win loss. You know, 54-37 looks a heck of a lot better right now.
And to sort of go tie it all together in terms of. Games they should win, runs they haven't put together, coming home. They get an 11-game homestand
mm-hmm.
against the Royals, the Clevelands, and the Red Sox. So if there was ever, immediately after the trade deadline also, so if there was ever a time for a run, hard to see it coming any better time than right after the trade deadline. Hopefully after some meaningful additions back in Toronto. I don't know. To me, that seems like, not it, obviously, but to me that seems like those 11 games are pretty big.
We've had a couple of series that have felt outsized large, and I think that definitely, I would agree, counts as one of them. Let's flip the camera inward a little bit in terms of this Jays homecoming. You talk about that very same... time frame, those home games, 11 game homestand. Are you yourself planning on greeting your 2021 Toronto Blue Jays at home?
You know, I wasn't. Because I truly don't know how I feel comfort COVID-wise about going to a building with 15,000 people in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got the email today with the pre-sale code, and I looked at Ticketmaster and I couldn't help myself. So I do have tickets for a game. I say that with the caveat that myself, my wife, and our friends have all agreed that if it is raining and the roof is closed, we will probably not go.
That's fair.
But hoping for good weather and an open roof and going to see some baseball. And I think that, like all things sort of reintegrating back into society, whether that's going to patios or going to someone's house, you know, it's uncomfortable till you're there. And I think with everything, I've been like, I don't know about this. And then you're there. It's like, wow, this feels very normal and it's fine. So who knows?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The preamble of going in is probably going to be greatly overruled by the feeling of euphoria of sitting down and hearing the sounds and watching the sights and smelling the smells. Without saying too much, were the prices the same as they were normally?
Yeah, I don't want to say impressed with the price, because obviously it's more than it used to be, and I know that pricing is very testy with Blue Jays fans when it comes to tickets, but I am, maybe it's a very, very low bar to clear, but I'm impressed they're not jacking up these prices for
gouging you beyond belief.
Yeah, they're not, like, some of them aren't cheap,
sure,
but it's the Blue Jays.
Secondary market's going to be bananas. That is my prediction. I before getting that code as well, I sort of looked anybody that had been given early access, that the secondary market was out of control. But that's obviously to be expected. We'll see what happens when it opens to the general public. We'll see what the reaction is.
Are you going to go to a Blue Jays game?
I would love to. It is one of those things right now that it's not as simple as, like, I feel like going tonight and then I walk and go down there.
Of course,
right? Obviously.
Of course.
So it's one of those things that if I want to go to a game, it sort of has to have a week's plus notice on it. I'm sure I will get talked into it at some point and not be able to pass it up. Nothing is stopping me in terms of fear or discomfort. Is simply a matter of, like, it's nothing that I do on a whim anymore. It's basically
logistics for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, my ability to just buy the tickets and figure it out later is not the same.
Right.
Nevertheless, if I don't go this year, obviously I'll be there. I'll be there in 2022 as well. There's a certain amount of tickets that'll be available, and we'll see how the year goes. But yeah, I would absolutely love to, and I can't wait to hear the crowds and to see it, and it's going to be an amazing moment. That first game back on the 30th is going to be unbelievable.
Yeah, I can't believe how much I want to see Rogers Center.
Yeah,
just like the concrete shitbox we all hate. It's just kind of like, well, it's better.
Yeah. I was reminiscing. Caitlin McGrath, who's been on the show a couple times, wrote a piece in the spring about asking people what they missed about going to Blue Jays games at Rogers Center. And it gave me cause to reflect. And I was thinking about it as I was writing a reply to it. And I think, you know, something about Rogers Center that is special to me is it is now the building that I have the oldest connection with, that I still go to all the time.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, 'cause, you know, my mom sold a childhood home and where she moved, and my dad has an apartment that it isn't the apartment he moved to after my parents split up. Like, I've been going there since I was like 6 years old. So it's like sort of crazy. I don't have any other buildings that I can just walk into whenever I want, to buy a ticket and have these experiences. So, like, I almost think of it as, because I've been there so many times over so many different parts of my life, is that, you know, those parts of me still sort of exist in that building, and a sight line or, you know, something familiar can jog memories from all different parts of my life. So, not to wax too poetic about it, it is, as you were saying, you never know how much you would miss this place that you never endingly complain about when you're, it's wonderful. And I can't wait.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's, It's going to be really weird.
Yeah.
In no uncertain terms.
Yeah. Anyway, we will take a quick break. We will come back on the other side and talk about more sports. And we return. Last night, on Tuesday night, the NBA Finals ended. I will admit, too, I didn't watch all of it. But no. It seemed like every game, NBA Twitter was going kind of crazy. I ended up being swayed. And listen, we had a long-standing history of calling the Milwaukee Bucks frauds. And listen, winning this particular NBA championship, as much as people did this to the Raptors when they did it, it's not going to stop me from calling them frauds that much. But I will say, it is pretty impossible to not have been won over by the charms of one Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, look, I tweeted this a few weeks ago, and I think people misunderstood what I meant, where I said the Raptors are still the reigning real season champions.
That's right.
It's nothing to do with injuries. The last time there was an 82-game season with no play-in tournament, the Raptors won the title.
That's right.
That's just a fact. Do I think there is an argument to be made where, like, people saying the Bucks aren't real champions, and then be like, well, the Raptors beat Golden State without KD, blah, blah, blah? Sure.
The Bucks team they beat was fully healthy?
Exactly. So is that Sixers team.
So?
And I would say those Bucks and Sixers teams were both better than the Bucks and Sixers teams this year, but I digress.
Yeah. I agree. That made Jimmy Butler on that Sixers team.
Right? Exactly. Am I going to sit here and stop calling the Milwaukee Bucks
frauds? And they had Brogdon on the Bucks team, did they not?
Yes, they did.
Okay, so.
I'm not going to sit here and not call the Milwaukee Bucks frauds.
That's right.
However, in a group chat that was not shared on Sportsfeld about a week and a bit ago, I had some spicy Giannis takes. Let's just say that. I'm not going to get into them. Suffice to say, they were all proven to be entirely incorrect. I've decided that I'm moving those takes from Giannis onto James Harden. If you'd like to draw the conclusions of what those takes were, you're free to do so. But I will say, hard to say anything bad about a guy who said, no, I'm staying, I'm going to win, and then immediately doing so and finishing it with a 50-point, 14-rebound statement game.
Unreal.
And made two, like, all-time, all-world plays over the course of the finals. So.
Yeah.
Power to Giannis.
And listen, something else that I really grew to appreciate is over the last little bit, in the mold, I think, of your Michael's Jordan, your Kobe's Bryant, your LeBron's James, there was almost this thing in the NBA, and this almost happened to Giannis, right? Was like, the conversation was like, he needs to become like a tough, angry, like he has to like change, right? And who mm-hmm. he is to become the next level superstar. And he did it while still being like seemingly a really kind, like nice guy
yeah.
who like had used the experience of everyone wanting him to be something to further fuel himself, to be himself and to like, he still, obviously, he doesn't lack the work ethic the rest of those guys do, but, like, he didn't feel the need to turn himself into, like, this cold, unrelenting, like, robot that doesn't, you know, go through things and face challenges and become better. And then, you know, something just sort of clicked for him midway through this playoffs where he was like, if I can get to a level that no one can stop me in the league, and he absolutely dominated his finals numbers. Everyone has said it already, and we're obviously not a go-to basketball resource, but like it's the best years of Shaq's career in the playoffs, his most dominant finals. Like that's the numbers that Giannis is putting up and doing it while running the floor and handling and like also being an incredible defensive player. It was amazing. And it was the first time since he signed the extension that I was like, damn, remember how much we thought Giannis was coming to the Raptors.
Yeah, it's hard not, especially after all this, obviously, it's hard not to sort of think on that a little bit, just because it's like, okay, they could have been, I don't know, a dynasty. but
people keep not picking the Raptors to win multiple titles with.
Look, did I look up the NBA odds on the Raptors winning next year's title this morning? Maybe.
Got to be able to get pretty good money for that. There's no way.
I mean, they weren't even on the list that I saw today. So all I'm saying is that don't count out the Raptors literally ever. I sort of think they're going to be good again.
Well, sure.
Let's see what we got. What's the Raptors are plus 6,600 to win the NBA title right now. That sits them between the Pelicans and the Pacers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also seeing them plus 6,000 behind, tied with the Pelicans and the Blazers and the Knicks ahead of the Grizzlies and Pacers and Bulls. Oh, boy. Listen, who knows what direction this draft's going to go. Obviously, that's going to be a huge part of it. We will obviously monitor that as it gets a little closer. But I thought, you know, a tip of the cap. And Chris Middleton also, for the first time in my life, I saw Chris Middleton play well for a couple games.
Yeah, and good for PJ Tucker for beating all his old teammates.
And Drew Holiday, yada yada. And the, you know what, the wave of public support for Chris Paul rising and then crashing, also fun to experience.
Yes, very, very odd narrative around Chris Paul in these playoffs, I thought.
Like, up until they were, like, they got up 2-0 and everyone was like, man, really, really great for CP. Like, he's going to do it. Like, he deserves it. He's this long-tenured, like, it adds to his reputation as, like, being one of the all-time great point guards. And they lost Game 3, and it was like, ah, oh, fuck Chris Paul. Like,
I saw a take I hadn't thought of, that Chris Paul, who orchestrated to stop the strike last year, lost the team that started the strike, which I enjoyed.
Other points, if you wanted to make, if you wanted to search for fun ways to spin this, similar to how the Raptors needed LeBron to leave the conference for them to be like, we are over the hump and this is it.
Yes.
The Bucks, Norm Powell finally not being in the way. Finally, they were able to get past Norm Powell.
Another team was able to take them out for them, which I think was nice of them.
Yeah. No Norm Powell, the Bucks can finally thrive in a playoff series. So that is it. Draft is coming up. I don't know exactly when, but I remain entrenched that they're in that thing where it's like, if there is a top four, you're just taking whoever the fourth guy is. It's Thursday, next Thursday. So we'll talk about the draft a little more in depth next week, because it'll be the next day, and then, you know, we'll have insights coming into it, you know?
Yeah, and I think that, I don't know, part of me wants them to trade it.
No, come on.
Part of me is just like, give me, I don't know, give me a big, I just want a big transaction. Give me some big.
Picking fourth overall is a big transaction.
Fourth and next year's pick and Chris Boucher for Dame.
Oh, boy. We'll see where Dame ends up. I feel like not Toronto, but maybe. It's a great times. It's great times. It's fun times to be a fan of any team in this city. It's going to be a great transaction week and a half here coming up, eh? You got MLB trade deadline. We got drafts in both leagues. We've got the Leafs are losing a player, which is the most important thing on the planet tonight in the expansion draft. I don't even know. People were getting mad online about this, obviously. That Maple Leafs team, it's hard. I can't go from the way that ended and how disgusted I was to now being like, I can't believe they're going to lose Kerfoot or the guy they traded for. I don't even remember the name of the guy they traded for this week. I traded for a guy this week. McCann.
Right. And now it sounds like he's going to the Kraken.
There you go, man.
Which, like, it's so easy to just immediately get upset about the Maple Leafs doing anything, and I get that, but like, I've never even seen the guy play. Like, I'm not gonna.
And you do the old, then what they lost in the expansion draft was a guy they never had,
right?
Which is to say that their expansion draft loss was a seventh round pick and a prospect that had not panned out, right? Basically, Hollander in a seventh.
Yeah, and I've never again. Guy will never see play.
Yeah. So, and again, still too angry at them. Still too angry at the Leafs to even be upset.
Yeah. And the Leafs, like we said, the Leafs are pretty much dead to us till the season starts at best, but probably the playoffs.
Probably the playoffs. Probably deep in the playoffs. Probably after they've... Again, we didn't... Again, we tried that this year. We didn't get on until they were up 3-1. The first time we talked with any level of confidence about them. And look where it got us. Look where it got us.
I am still team don't blow it up, though.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You can't trade Marner. No question. It's too much. No. We're past the part of that where that was like angry and salty feelings. Now you're just like, okay, let's get in here.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the Blue Jays. We circle around just late breaking, not late breaking, but like just keeping up on old Rossi's on making the media rounds. Since the Jays are in a good place to add a piece at the deadline with the depth in the farm system, feels the pitching rotation is sparse and that the rotation's in a good spot. Added, we could be better. We will look to see if there are opportunities there, but it doesn't feel like it's an area you could be opportunistic, which is to say, you know, I didn't ever expect Max Scherzer, realistically, and I didn't ever expect, I honestly don't even expect as much as Berrios. I don't expect that there's going to be a big splash pitcher that's really, truly available that they're able to get a reasonable price out of. But more and more, I got to tell you, I think like your Nelson Cruz thing. I think Nelson Cruz has a lot of truth behind it. I'll say that much. It's starting to get said enough. Yeah. It's like it's not just like Jonah and Drew getting people on Twitter riled up. Like real actual people who are insiders in rumors are saying like the Jays are interested in Nelson Cruz.
I am obviously fully on the Nelson Cruz bandwagon considering he's hitting better than everyone on the team that isn't named Vlad, which is insane to think about. But I'm firmly in camp Joey Gallo.
Joey Gallo.
Not to say that I would say no to Nelson Cruz.
Sure.
But I don't know, I watch this outfield play sometimes and it's like, boy, it'd be nice if it was a guy who could also play the field and hit at an elite level.
I got you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think Gallo is obviously very three true outcomes. You get a little lower on the average, which is passed off with obviously the walks and on the other end the strikeouts. Whereas Nelson Cruz, you know, it's just being a beast and hitting it all the times, and that's all that really matters. You know, they do use their DH slot to give guys rest, but also, you know, just don't play the guys that need rest. Like,
yeah, I think just put him on the bench because the bench is terrible.
Bench one of the bad outfielders every game, right?
Yeah, and then if you have to have a pinch hitter, it's that instead of, you know, Danny Jansen. Also it's time to trade one of the catchers.
Yeah, well, the clock obviously is ticking on Reese McGuire as Alejandro Kirk.
4-for-5 last night.
Yes, the home run that was circulating was off a shortstop. but still.
Still.
No longer on the IL. He is healthy and in AAA. I think the clock is ticking on how long Reese McGuire has a roster spot. He has already been DFA'd once this year.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think his, like we talk about often with guys like Randall Grichuk, he was hot. And like we all were into it. But I kind of feel like Reese McGuire is, to quote Denny Green, he is who he thought he was.
Sure. I think my last thing on the catching trade thing is like, it sure is time to move on for somebody, but I would only want to caution against that, against the idea of like move on from one of them and get something that matters. Right. It's sort of the, remember the Raptors 2019, it was the Jeremy Lin excitement. And Blake was very smart to be like, it's good that they have Jeremy Lin as long as they don't ever use him in a situation that matters. Right.
I'm also not opposed to trading Kirk for something that does matter.
Sure.
Just for what it's worth. But
good living. We will see how it goes. Again, they are in a good position. I agree with what Ross said. Hopefully they don't make a deal until Tuesday of next week so we can talk about it immediately on this show.
Make some moves, though. Oh, my God.
Buddy, it's like it's 10 days away. The end of next week, we're going to know.
Then
they'll be at home with the shiny new toys.
Man, that's what I want. Give us the first weekend back in Toronto with something nice new to show off.
Like that first week of having Tulo all of a sudden.
Exactly.
Whew. What a time. We finally did it. We finally mentioned 2015. I did it. That is it. I mean, listen, dog days, as we said. We lie in wait of many transactions in all leagues. So we were going to move on with our match song of the week and what we're watching in the mailbag after this. We return, Jake. This week, your song of the week, the song that you would recommend this week as song of the week, is what?
Song of the week this week is New Low by Nightlife. Nightlife are a fun band that I found out about last week, week before. I don't know. Time is fake. But sort of like a 90s R&B meets emo kind of sound that I'm very much enjoying and recommend because it's good.
Beautiful. Match of the week this week. Gonna give it up. There's gonna be a Texas death match on Dynamite tonight. So I don't expect it to be on the level of the exploding barbed wire landmine death match from earlier this year, but always exciting to see how they approach these things, especially as they approach it on television and not on a pay-per-view, and especially as they approach it as technically it is a New Japan match being fought in an American company, which I am always a mark for. Josh and I are huge marks for that because we are nerdy 35-year-olds who talk about wrestling on the internet, and that's the kind of thing that you give people like us to make them happy. Just as Jake, you are one to want to say something about ska or pop punk in your part. I am one to mention New Japan being in America in my part. It is our things that we cannot turn ourselves away from. Jake, that switches gears for me into the old boob tube, the old idiot box, the old look at this thing, the old television. what's been capturing your attention in the great world of content out there?
Nothing new, but we've got some time to fill, so might as well talk. We were rewatching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia this last week, which is a funny show that I very much enjoy, but it also got me thinking about the idea of how people talk about how you can't be funny anymore because of political correctness, and how that's just clearly not true. And I think people who say that just like aren't smart enough to figure out how to do it.
That's right.
Because like It's Always Sunny has been completely inappropriate and awful forever, but they obviously evolve some things and change some opinions, but they're just very good at it. And I think it's really hard to be funny in that way.
Yeah.
Especially these days. And I think everyone who complains about it not being possible just isn't as good at it.
Yeah.
And it's that simple.
Yeah. Cat Williams, of all people, has a great thing on there about if you look up his thoughts on cancel culture. He was on a podcast, I believe, and it was like so perfectly stated. I won't be able to do it justice. But the core of it was like nobody who watches basketball is like enthusiastic about the idea of their being out of bounds. It's just like,
right.
But you have to, the great players know how to play within the rules of the NBA. It's sort of.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. And you can like push the limit of things, but
that's right.
If you're smart and good at it, then you can still make it good.
Absolutely. We have been watching a show called The Great, which I had heard.
Oh, I like that.
I had heard nothing about, had no idea. It ended up, it is carbon copy, very great, like written up the alley of my wife. It's the kind of thing that she would not only know about, but really enjoy. It's a historical fiction comedy drama based on Catherine the Great. And it does a good job of billing itself as, not really a true story in that they're like some of the obviously beats of what is happening are drawn from, history, but like generally in a very comedic way, like acknowledging that this isn't how any of it happened. I think it's really nice to sort of have it. It's a nice refreshing take on it. And it's genuinely funny. Great performances from Elle Fanning. She's incredible as Catherine the Great.
Yeah, we watched it a few months back, and I quite enjoyed it. And what I enjoyed about it was that I thought it was going to be one thing, and it was very much another.
Yeah,
which quite is always funny. A nice surprise.
The guy who plays Peter III, also really good.
So he's they're both very good. Everyone in it is quite good, I think, actually.
So we're 3/4 of the way through. We're just hitting near the end. And what a great find! I love when that happens. I love quite often when you were in these relationships, Jake, as you know. At once in the blue moon, one of you will come up with, like, hey, what do you want to watch? And one of you will come up with something and nail it. I did it like I did with Detroiters. And then you'll have these periods, as we discuss in this show, where nobody has any ideas. And then, out of the blue, someone will have an idea and it will totally nail it. And my wife totally nailed it with the great. Really enjoyed it.
Marriage is just trying to find something to watch on TV.
That's right. And celebrating the wins. And then deciding at which pace to watch them. That takes us on to the mailbag. First question comes from Garrett Swan, who called in last week to AE Double Dudes, a first-time caller, and had mentioned to me on the show that he was listening to me do podcasts on The Score with Norm Souza.
Wow.
The Daily
Dose.
That's
going way back.
2012, right? 10 years? Talking about 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Jesus.
Anyway. It always amazes me that people have been following my content that long, because it's just, frankly, it's just not enough content to even do. You add it all up, it's like maybe you got a year's worth of stuff to entertain you there over the course of 10 years. Anyway, Garrett asks, who would have more fun on the Other's side project, Jake on AE Double Dudes or me on Columbia House Party?
Well, you've been on Columbia House Party.
Right, but if you were thrust into the role of co-host...
I think I would enjoy Double Dudes. I very much enjoy both of your, all of your, however many there are, co-hosts, as people and as hosts. And also, I know nothing, which I think would be fun. And I think it would be fun to talk about not knowing anything.
Yeah, and Josh would certainly make sure that you had a good time. He is, it's almost a disease where he must entertain whoever he is talking to.
Yes, I think that's very true.
But I listen... This is almost unfair because my version of this is I get to talk to Blake for an hour.
Right. And I mean, what? There's nothing better than that.
It would be quite simple to simply feed into him his curiosity and feed him simple questions about albums he likes and listen to him expound on it, or like help him interview an expert or have him think of interesting questions to ask me, knowing who I am and knowing the kind of things I enjoy. It'd be very easy for me to have a great time on Columbia House Party. That's
always said my favorite episodes of Columbia House Party were when I was a band that Blake was more passionate about than me, and I just got to sit back and listen to him explain it, basically.
Yeah, because it's never like it's never the very small short like, oh, I like this song and that was it. There's always beautiful depth and reasoning behind his thoughts and feelings that I always really enjoy. So I think we would both have a very good time, but it would be very easy for me to have a great time on Columbia House Party. Midawesome, this great question right here. Which MLB team is the biggest fraud this year? Whew, lots of picks.
Man, so...
I think obviously the early one, it's like, man, it's easy to pick the Red Sox, but I'm almost sick of... beating my head against the wall of like the Red Sox just being good enough to do it.
I get a lot of my picks in, now that you've said the Red Sox, I think a lot of my picks were cowards and not frauds.
Sure.
Like the Minnesota Twins to me.
Mm.
Huge cowards. Frauds.
The Mets are obviously huge frauds.
Well, the Mets don't count.
Winning their division by three games.
But their division is garbage and no one takes them seriously because of it.
That's fair.
I'm going to say the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty easy one as well. The Milwaukee Brewers also. It's like, man, you look at that. Like that's a lot of guys that washed out of the Jays to be... Dan Vogelbach, Rowdy Tellez. Come on.
I mean, like, yeah. Statistically, it's the Mets, of course. Jeez, the Dodgers are actually much better statistically than I thought. The Mets are the easy stats pick.
Anyway, here's the, this is
unfortunate. I'm gonna go a little off the board, even though they're not leading the division.
I know what you're about to say. I agree.
The New York Yankees.
Yeah, I have two picks, and one of them is the Yankees. The idea that they're scary in the slightest is hilarious.
We did a little outdoor bachelor party for a friend on Sunday, and Sunday Night Baseball was on, And I didn't. I recognized like two names in the Yankees lineup. One of them was Rougned Odor.
The idea that they are still a threat, or like it's scary to play the Yankees, is laughable, and that's what makes it so sickening to be 6-6 against them this year.
Yeah.
The other pick is the Seattle Mariners.
Yes, the -52 run differential Seattle Mariners.
Somehow ahead of the. Listen, it's one of those things, right? To your point, it's like it's hard for them to be frauds when no one takes them seriously. -52 run differential, somehow 51-45 because they play in the West. And listen, all fairness, they beat the Jays in this series over this year. But man, hard not to, after you play the Rangers the way the Jays did, it's hard not to be like, man, they would win 115 games that they played in the AL West. It'd be simple.
I think you could make the argument that if the Blue Jays played in any division other than the NL West, they would be in first place by like 10 games.
Yeah. Feels that way, doesn't
it? I'm including the 58-win White Sox and Astros in that as well. Because, like, they're good, but I don't know. The Astros feel hollow to me, too. I don't know why.
Astros feel... I like that. Here's one that's it comes up around these times every so often. Quad A player, you're given 10 years of dedicated training and unlimited resources, which includes coaching, facilities, etc. Which Olympic event do you think you'd have the best bet of qualifying in?
Oh, man, that's a good one. I mean, like, the answer is probably none of them.
Sure.
But 10 years of dedicated training with... I guess this is from me now, today. It's got to be something obscure. It's got to be, like, handball. Like, handball's one of those sports that I'm sure is really hard. But you look at it, it's like, I could throw a ball in that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, fencing, maybe?
Fencing, not bad.
Again, probably much more technical than I'm giving it credit for.
Something like archery, maybe? Because it's like we're looking into an aging curve here where you're going to lose a bunch of your skills and stuff, right? You're not running any faster even if you train for 10 years. At 10 years from now at 45, I'm not going to be running any faster to be close to Olympic.
And I know that, like, I know curling was a popular answer for this one, but, like, to be an Olympic level curler, I don't know. That's maybe 10 years of dedicated training, but, like, curling's so specific.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I think it's got to be, like, archery or, like.
Yeah.
Boy, yeah. Because, like, otherwise it's like fencing or, like.
I don't want to say something sailing, that's not athletic because shooting? Obviously they're shooting. Yeah. Skeet shooting, probably. Anything that's not, obviously they're all, some are more, it has to be on the skill to athletics ratio. It has to lean mm-hmm. heavy onto skill, I think.
Javelin? I don't know. Field hockey?
I feel like field hockey, I just get like dummied regardless. Me at 45 playing field hockey against 20-year-old field hockey athletes, I feel like I get my shins broken pretty quickly.
Yeah. And listen, anybody that answers curling to that is, I don't think he's ever curled.
Yeah.
It's not that easy. Drew, what is one everyday activity, game, or event that should be part of the Olympics? I would love to see cooking.
Yeah. Damn.
And listen,
that's really good.
I'm also somebody that, you remember this in the past on this show, I have made passionate pleas that I wanted regular card games to be televised in the way that poker
like did. Go fish.
I want euchre televised. I want hearts televised. I want spades televised. I want all the card games. I want all that to be Olympic sports as well.
That's good.
Olympic euchre champion. How amazing that would be.
I really like cooking.
Cooking, right?
That's such a good answer.
Thank you.
I'm not gonna beat that. I'm just gonna say cooking.
Beautiful. Prairie Jays, I think I know the answer to this one. What's your go-to generic pizza place, and what are you ordering? I think generic means obviously big chain.
Yeah, it's obviously Domino's.
Yeah, it is obviously Domino's.
Domino's and whatever's on their many, many coupons.
Get the door, it's Domino's. It's usually two medium, three topping.
Yeah, or one large, four topping.
Anyway, right now, currently, the current self order is pepperoni and sausage with jalapeno. And then the wife gets a side Hawaiian because she likes the Hawaiian, and we mix and match. Hawaiian with what's the kind of caramelized onions on them? Oh, so good.
I like the What's it?
Brooklyn pepperoni.
Yes, thank you. I like the one large four topping, so I like having it left over the next day.
Of course, that's the two mediums. Each eat half a pizza, and we have a whole pizza the next day.
Brooklyn pepperoni, green peppers, hot peppers, and mushrooms is my go-to.
Sounds like a cartoon. It's like a cartoon pizza right there.
Yes, it is. That's why we like it.
And then I also like Pizza Hut, but I haven't had it in. I haven't had Pizza Hut in a long time.
I haven't had Pizza Hut in years. Yeah. Bring back the big New Yorker, he yells again.
James Nielsen, how competitive are you at board games, sports, video games, etc.?
Depends who I'm playing against and what it is.
I'm not that competitive when it comes to those sort of things.
I'm not, but I have it in me to get... I don't really have a middle ground. Like, I'm either extremely chill and I don't care, or I'm, like, gonna get upset.
Sure.
Not like upset, but like I have it in me to get really mad at mostly video games. Board games, I'm usually drunk and having a good time. But I have it in me for sure.
Yeah, I would say that I agree with that in that it can come out of me, but I generally approach almost all those scenarios like doing everything I can to make sure that doesn't happen. Right? I generally enter into it being like, all right, let's have a good time. It's over with without anybody being too upset. Then, as you said, other people can drag it out of me, unfortunately. A bit of a head case in that way.
Yeah. I think that's exactly it.
Bit of a head case. Bit of a hothead when it comes to getting egged on. Paul Adam, you must hear the last question. You can only wear one article of footwear for the rest of your life. You must wear it everywhere at all times except the shower and in bed. What are you choosing? One article of footwear.
I feel like new Blundstones.
Yeah, unfortunately, it has to be like those boots, those pull-on boots.
They're heavy, but they're so comfortable.
Because, you know, my first thought is like, oh, you know, Crocs or comfort running shoes. Like I have some Adidas boots that are super comfortable. That like I'm not trying to blow anybody away fashion-wise. They're just very comfortable shoes I can wear at all times. But Canadians, we have to worry about winter. So it would need to at least survive the winter. It doesn't have to thrive, but it would need to at least survive.
Yeah, I think that's key, especially living here. Like you have to be able to go out in them and not freeze and die.
It's too bad.
It is.
So yeah, like a light pull-on boot, unfortunately. Unfortunately.
Chelsea boots.
Chelsea boots, baby. Boy, oh boy. Boy, oh boy. Dang it. Try not to say that. My wife pointed out that I say that too much, and here I am saying it again. Anyway, that solves that for the mailbag for another week. There is not much left for us to do than to move forward and answer whether we are sad or not sad for another week, and we are going to do that after this. And we proceed to the end of the episode where we answer whether we are sad or not sad for another week. I'm going to go first. I'm going to say that I am not sad. This coming weekend, we are headed off to London to see my wife's family as we are all vaxxed up and we can have a celebration of the fact that we've been married for a year and a half with her family. It's not quite a wedding, but it is an opportunity for the family to all get together and celebrate us, which is something I like, is talking about us and being us. In all seriousness, it's gonna be really nice to get out and have a big family event we haven't had in forever, and hugs and kisses and Portuguese food, and my wife has some nice clothing, nice outfit. She's gonna look very pretty. We're gonna look very nice, have some photos taken, emerge from our little hideout from the last year. It's going to be very nice. Looking forward to it. And also always nice to stretch the legs and get out of town and go for a little drive.
Yeah, we were out of town for a day on Friday, and unbelievable how, like, it's one of those things that, like, there are moments we didn't know we were going to be able to do that again.
Crazy, right?
Yeah. Truly.
Jake, for this week, in terms of how you feel, do you feel sad or not sad?
I'm going sad. Obviously, another sports world on a Wednesday where I have to talk about fucking Toronto police being fucking shitty cowards again. Attacking people in encampments, attacking people, trying to stop people from tearing down encampments. As we speak, currently attacking and pepper spraying people outside of a police station, trying to get people who were arrested at the encampments released today. And just like, it's fucking sucks. And it's so disheartening how little not all people in power in the city, but most people in power in the city just seem to not care. John Tory has made it abundantly clear he doesn't give a fuck. Same with Brad Ross and all the shitty counselors that we know are shitty and continue to be shitty. And it's just another embarrassing, disgusting, sad day in the city that is continuing as we record well into the 6 o'clock hour. It's been all day. And it's just like, The stress thing is, I don't know what is there to change other than getting rid of, like, the mayor, which I think is fair. But, you know, as was pointed out to me today by a city councilor, council is not in session until September. And the only way to bring them back into session is to make an emergency vote for it, which will not have the votes to happen. So it's kind of, the system has failed. The police state is in full force and has failed the people. The government is failing the people, even though there are those few who are fighting for the right things. And I don't know, it's a defeating day and just a sad day, but solidarity and all of my respect and gratitude, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word for the people on the ground today who are still there. So I don't know. It sucks. And as usual, as we've said many times this past year, and we will continue to say with our full chests, fuck the police, defund the police, fuck John Tory, fuck everyone who stands with them. And that's all.
Succinct. Yeah, listen, unfortunately, something that we have to talk about, way more often than we would obviously like to. Absolutely. I think we've mentioned as well on the other side is it is sort of heartening to see people we know, and I count you among these folks, as people that are really waking up to the fact that this is something that our generation is going to have to tackle, that it's, you know, the putting it off and looking either behind us or ahead of us and asking why other people aren't doing anything is not the way, and it's going to have to be. The way to lead is to use the tools that we have and the ways that we've learned to communicate with each other to come together and push for things. And as you said, it can also be very, you know, depressing and frustrating because that organization can often be lacking, or sort of this idea of how do we even do it or how do we even find this change can be difficult. But some great words of thought from you and the desire to continue to push on and continue to push for building a better place that we all want to live for everyone in the future. Anyway, that is it for another week of Sportsfeld. It is the dog days, as we said. Summer, if you're looking for more Sportsfeld, that was a short episode, only an hour long. I want more Sportsfeld. Go to patreon.com/Sportsfeld. You get old shows, you get ad-free shows, you get look-backs to historical events. This week, we're looking back to the Raptors against Cavaliers 2018 playoffs, the loss to the Cavs that broke the team apart and led them on the path to getting Kawhi Leonard. We also have mailbags, and every Monday, Blue Monday, a complete wrap-up of the Blue Jays week that was, interviews and recaps, every single game and every single transaction, all of that and more, patreon.com/Sportsfeld. In the meantime, we thank you very much for listening to Sportsfeld.